Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. I'm Jamie McMillan. With me, as always, to discuss all things rugby are Rachel Malcolm, Chris Patterson, and for the very last time before he takes on his new role at Glasgow, Al Kellogg. On the show this week, we look back on an action-packed weekend of rugby in the Guinness Six Nations and Guinness Pro 14, and we discuss some of the key talking points around the game in general, including the new Global Women 15s competition and a line calendar. Well, Rachel, mostly a lot of rugby to get through from last weekend, not only the Guinness Six Nations, but the Pro 14 was back in full swing as well. But two victories for our Glasgow Warriors and our Edinburgh sides. Glasgow Warriors won 30 points to 25 against Ospreys at home, and Edinburgh won away from home against Connacht 15-14. Let's look at the Glasgow game first then, Mossy. Good to see Glasgow getting back to winning ways and some young boys putting a good performance that I'm sure impressed you.
Yeah, a must-win game as it kind of the push for European qualification for the Champions Cup goes. It was and another important win. Obviously got the bonus point win away from home the week before and a scrappy affair in Italy, really, but they managed to get it done. And then again, started the game poorly on Friday night, but figured out a way to win, played some excellent stuff. Some of the, again, the young players delivering when they had to. So Glasgow have had such a disrupted season. We've said it all along, haven't we, in terms of games cancelled or games postponed, disruptions to training, disruptions to absolutely everything. You couldn't write the number of kind of hurdles they've had to get over. So they've not had any consistency in terms of preparation, but they look like a more consistent side now with their young players performing and Kenny Ryan Wilson and the older players still doing really well as well. So had to win, important to get it. Lee Jones obviously rolled back the years with a 70-metre dash. Ross Thompson again excelled with a lot from the number 10 position, with a lot of pressure on him. Him and Rufus McLean linked up for a try, linked up for I think three kickoffs as well, which is brilliant. We don't often see kickoffs being one back, but I think Rufus won three back at the weekend. So applied pressure when they had to, got over the line, and it was a much-needed win that still gives them an outside chance with two fixtures remaining to finish third and get that automatic Champions Cup place.
Rich, who impressed you then from watching that game? Who stood out for you?
I think Ross Thompson again. You know, he's really starting to show a maturity at number 10. And, you know, one thing about this season is that although, you know, COVID has been a bit of a nightmare for teams, it has given these young boys a really good opportunity to get game time at the clubs. And, you know, it's just going to give them that platform to now move on to hopefully play in the national team and things like that in years to come. But I think the maturity he's showing to play and perform consistently at that level has been brilliant. So, yeah, that'd be a standout for me.
The consistency for a young player in that position is excellent. You know, Rossi works really hard at his game. And, I mean, there's a lot of young players playing well, but to do it consistently like Ross has with so many decision makings and so many tough games is it's good to see. And there are a lot of young players who, you know, despite not having a lot of rugby, are performing well, which is difficult to do. You talk about game minutes under your belt at any level of senior rugby, but we've got a few or a handful of central young players coming through that they don't have, never mind a lot of game minutes at in professional rugby, they don't have a lot of game minutes in senior rugby, and they're obviously being prepared as best they can without exposure to too many games by the intensity and what's expected of them in training. And it's good to see you because it's a difficult thing to do.
So as mentioned before, Edinburgh also won away from home against Connacht. Now, we all know, we talked about it last week, that it's never an easy place to go and play. I guess there's some times of the year where it's much harder than others, but a win from home, especially in Galway, is a good return for Edinburgh. Rich, these away games and these big games at the end of this part of the season, how important is it to kind of cement and get these victories in the books?
Yeah, I didn't actually see a lot of the game, but, you know, like you say, I think it's a result which is massive for Edinburgh at the moment. They've had a tough season. And to have those little boosts where you go somewhere where it is really difficult to play and you could easily come away with a pretty rubbish game and a loss behind you and you, that kind of drags into the next week as well with the travel. So to go away, get a win and come back on a high is really important for the following game and the following week as well of training. So I think particularly with the season they've had, it's probably more important than ever. And To get a kind of last minute one, which really does like leave you on a buzz, is brilliant as well.
I had to dig it out, in all honesty. It was a terrible night condition wise. I mean, it was wet and windy, but the wind was, as it can be in Galway, really strong, and it's straight up and down the pitch. Now Edinburgh played into the wind in the first half, and I think was it 12-5 at half time in Connacht's favour, and you kind of knew that that probably wasn't, well, you'd assumed it wasn't a big enough lead for the strength of wind that Edinburgh had behind them. But then I think the first point in the second half were 60, 65 minutes in, and it was a penalty. So it was up against it, lost a couple of players to injuries, had disruption, was almost impossible to get any form of structure into the game because of the wind for both teams. And Connacht, who've played particularly well this year, especially some of their attacking play and their intricate attack. Edinburgh, they didn't look like winning it, but they did. Nathan Chamberlain made a break for the first try for Maggie's try minus Burbage's try in the first half. And an important time just to get any points on the board into such a strong wind was important. And then kicking a penalty and then Chamberlain scoring late on was almost... I think they deserved it because they dug in and put up with, as I say, a couple of niggly injuries along the way. I think the game must have lasted about 2.25 hours of, you know, total time. So it was a real, real deep, dig deep and get a win away for home. And it was important. Edinburgh play away again this week. They're away to Cardiff, I think, on Monday this week, so or next week. So it's important to get that win again.
Sticking with the pro teams, Glasgow in particular, there's one man who will be keeping an even closer eye on it going forward. And huge congratulations to our very own Al Kellogg, who will be returning to the club next season as their managing director. Huge congrats, Al. I know you're delighted to be going back home to Glasgow, but yeah, just get your thoughts on that position that you're going to be taking over in the new season.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. You know, I'm very much looking forward to it. It's happened pretty quick. So yeah, as of 1st of April, I'll be back in at Scotch and I'll back working from home with my Glasgow Warriors hat on. But yeah, like I've got a decent amount of history with the club. I'm excited to renew that and very much look forward to a different guys.
I'll do anything to get off this podcast, Ali.
Well, I think that's it, Mossy. I think it's official retirement time from the podcast. So I'm sure all of our millions of listeners will be delighted to hear that. But
too big time now, eh? Too big
time. We've still got one of the top 10 players in the world. And, Rachel. And no, we'll be, you guys will be fine. You'll be fine.
The next time you'll be on, we'll be asking you questions, though.
Tough questions.
Proper grown up questions, is that what you mean?
Nah, doubt it. doubt it for Jamie.
Well, time to look back on the match with Ireland and the Guinness Six Nations then. A disappointing result at home once again. I think just frustration. I know we're all, you know, gutted that it wasn't a win. But Al, I'll come to you first. You know, we've been in this kind of situation before with Wales already in this tournament and tournaments previous. I guess when you got off to such a good start away from home, how difficult is it to back it up in this tournament? And what do you think that the boys will be trying to fix this week ahead of Italy?
Jamie, just like the biggest frustration, I'm sure, within the group and probably externally as well, is the fact that it did start so well. Like going down and winning in England, first time in 38 years, was a brilliant start. And all of a sudden, it's lined up in front of you. Now, you look back at the Wales game, and in particular the second half of the Wales game, because we've talked about it, the first 40 minutes was great from Scotland again. Slight blip towards half-time, but you know, if you win that Wales game, are you building enough momentum to then go and beat Ireland? Potentially, but these are all if, buts and maybes. What I actually came down to was that Ireland on Sunday for overall played better. Now Scotland battled back into that game and battled back with a fullback, albeit a world-class fullback, playing 10, and a 9 on the flank. but there was still, you know, 24-all, there's an opportunity to go on and get a win. So that almost made it more disappointing, was it, from a spectator's point of view, is that there was still a chance, albeit the line-out had misfired to a large degree. And you've got to credit Ireland for a lot of this. Like, their line out defence was exceptional. It rattled us, which made it force us into more mistakes. But they came and did what we expected them to do. They came pretty direct, they dominated physically, and, you know, break down their exceptional.
I'll on that line out, just for me to understand and hopefully others, what makes a good defensive line out? Is it the fact that you can almost crack the code as it used to be in the old days, so you almost know where it's going to go? Or is it a case of putting players and putting pods where you think it's going to go to try and force a late decision or a change of decision from the team thrown in?
I think it varies, Mossy, but my own view would be putting uncertainty into it. So, you know...
So being quite erratic in your defence, like, or...
Yeah, so erratic in defence, or it's almost planned chaos. You know, you know where you're going to end up, but you're trying to paint a different picture. You're talking somebody out of going to what would be the staple ball and then getting back. But all in all, you've also got to be very quick on the ground. In the Henderson example, Ian Henderson, when he pinched at the back of the tail, like, Scotland's drill was all right. It wasn't great, but it was all right. Mm. They created a space, and then he gets back and he scrambles back and gets a kind of half lift. Now, that's where international rugby, it's got to be double top. It's got to be right up there. And there was examples. Big Scott Cummins did very well in defence on Scotland's 22, and it looked for all the money like he was going to get that steal, but the Irish drill was so perfect that they won a ball that Scotty could have won. Now, the more you lose and the more you overthink it, sometimes it's a drill that drifts away. Now, I've not looked back on it like I would have if I was playing, so I've not looked at each individual lineout, but my overarching feeling was that they started by creating uncertainty, and it rattled us to a certain degree that we were then making poor decisions and putting in poor drill.
And Rach, you've obviously played hooker, you've thrown in. Was it a case as well at the weekend that maybe there was two or three bits that were not quite on it, so therefore that makes the situation worse, because you could fix one bit and another element of it may not be on the money. So which one do you fix first almost? It's a difficult situation to get out of, isn't it?
100%. You know, when your pack is rattled, there is no worse place to be than at hooker. Maybe at line-out collar could be the other place, but you know, it's so tough, because particularly in this day and age with social media and stuff like that, everyone blames the hooker, but very often, very often it's actually the little details which are going wrong.
No, that's not true. It's always the hooker's fault. Nothing to do with a jumper at any stage.
Yeah, I've done both, and I know it's very rarely the hooker's fault. But no, you know, the thing about when your line-out's not working is little things which would never happen in your drill start happening. So, like, little twitches, someone maybe hesitating on a movement, little things like that, which just put the whole thing off. And then that then loses confidence in each and every person in that drill. And that's what you start to see happening at the weekend, is just like they were losing confidence in their own drill. And that's the kind of bit you've got to get back to, you know, try and play those banker balls and get confidence, and get confidence in your hooker, who's at the same time losing it and thinking, is it me? And it's difficult sometimes to problem solve in those moments. You know, it's so easy to look back and go, oh well, you know, you've got your trigger wrong, or the hooker's overthrown it, or coming throwing the ball too early. That's really easy to look back and do, and it's very hard to do when you're in
the moment,
high pressure environment. And
like, sometimes mostly the thing to do is actually just to simplify things and just go, right, like, we're going to do a throw catch in the middle. Simplest drill you can get, because the way Ireland were moving about, made it very difficult to choose where the movement was going to take you, because at times they were beating us to the spaces where we thought there was going to be. Now, it wasn't there. Now, that's probably, I know I need to look back on it, but that's probably something Scotland will be looking at. Can we simplify the drill? I know another thing I would say is, when you try and relieve the pressure, as Scotland did with the ball over the top, I think it was Sam Johnson that came in the short line, like, those are brilliant for relieving pressure, whether it's a quick one to the front, to the nine, or anything that doesn't require the drill. All of a sudden, you know, you're back into it. But then that one went wrong, referee brought it back, and it resulted, I think that one resulted in a steal as well. So it was just, it cascaded for everybody involved in the line, and to Rachel's point, not just the hooker, but everybody involved in the line.
Well, that's the thing, because I mean, in some ways, I suppose to the casual observer, it can seem quite similar to kicking goals, but I've always had far more respect for the hooker, because if you're kicking a goal, the ball's static, the posts are static. There's no moving part. It's you and the ball and your technique. Whereas, say, for a hooker, there's you're relying on other people, A, remembering the call or getting the call right, the timing right, and you're actually thrown to a space where you hope somebody's going to be. And one of the massive triggers when kicking goals is picking a spot that you're going to kick at. And you can actually see that. You can visualise it. I used to use the exit signs behind the posts and behind me at BT Murrayfield at the moment, or one of the you know, a seat or an advertising board. And it was a physical point that you could aim at to get your body towards. But I would find it even more difficult to do that if there was nothing to pick out. So you're kicking at emptiness, or you're throwing at emptiness as a hooker, and it's a tough old gig, isn't it?
It is a tough gig. Then the drill.
But that's why you practice. That's why you're practicing.
Exactly. The drill that's done during the week should almost make it more to like what you're talking about. It's like, right, let's take the opposition out of this. We execute a drill, a throw, a jump, a lift, a movement on the ground. We execute that. The opposition, regardless of how good they are, shouldn't get near it. Apart from maybe 1 in 10, where they've picked a space and gambled. Ireland weren't gambling. Ireland were chasing. Showing different pictures and chasing brilliantly well. Now, you've got to credit them for what they did as well. And I know Paul O'Connell in commentary took a lot of credit, but he'll have done a huge amount of analysis along with the line-out leaders to make sure that they were one step ahead.
I'm going to have to apologise to everybody for this being a line-out podcast, but I'm actually... I'm going to pick you a wee bit further. In terms of that, how much time is spent on defensive line-out and offensive line in a week? I assume it will vary. I should really know. are there weeks where you'll do more time in your defensive setup than your offensive setup, or is it just something you have all season?
It will evolve throughout the course of the tournament. So the further into a tournament you go, probably the more time can be spent on defensive lineups because you have the drill.
Because you know the offensive stuff.
Yeah. Although throughout a tournament, and especially in a Six Nations tournament, it has to evolve because there's so much analysis done.
Yeah.
Like every single line out and every single option and every single area will have been done, analysed to an nth degree. So it has to evolve and, you know, paint a slightly different picture the next again week and attack. Defensively, a lot of the work is done off field. A lot of the work is done in looking for small triggers and, you know, looking at little things that will give you one up on the opposition, and they can be done in walkthroughs in the hotel lobby in the team room, and don't necessarily need to be done live all the time.
And you adapt those week on week depending on what obviously your picture is. Whereas with your attack, you likely have a bank of calls which you'll maybe gradually add one into here or there as whatever. But whereas with your defence, you could go from having a fully aerial defence all over the park to changing where you are in the pitch and what you want to do and how you want to do it. Depending on what they do. So, you could completely change your defence from one week to the next, depending on what you're up against. So that's probably the bigger changes, whereas with the attack, it'll be finer details and maybe adding in a call here or there.
There you go, Jamie.
Piece apart down there. One time, you would have been playing in the back line, Mossy, wondering why you weren't getting any ball. And I chatted to Dylan Hartley after the game, and he'd been injured the week before and hadn't done any training right up until about the team run. So he'd spent the whole week just analysing our line out, picked up little triggers, picked up little calls that he felt would give them a head start, and it did. So I never felt pressure like it. As a caller, you're going, I've got no idea where the space is. And that's where, I used to work closely with the forwards coaches about what messages do you want? And for me, it was always, I want solutions. I don't want, they might do this, might do that. Like, if I'm under pressure, tell me exactly where you think the space is. Tell me what call you want me to call. Now, I'm sure that was coming. It was a blip because Scotland's line-out has been so strong. And that's where I credit Ireland massively, because I think it was 92% Scotland's line-out as they went into that game. So, yeah.
Yeah, big area of the game. I thought, taking it away from the lines, I thought it was quite quite an exciting game, but I didn't think the actual overall quality of the game was particularly high. Now, the two are probably aligned a wee bit. You can get exciting games where there's lots of mistakes, and I've kind of felt the game was a little bit like that. There was undoubtedly brilliant bits in it, some brilliant individual performances. I thought, Furlong was good. I thought Henshaw was good in the midfield, Ty Bunn, but I thought Hamish Watson for us was, again, brilliant. Like, to perform like that in a team that's up against it again was amazing from Hamish. But I did think the overall standard of the game was quite poor. A lot of errors, and just a bit flat. Now that might have been because the standard of the day, the game the day before was outrageous. The England France game, it was almost on a different level in terms of intensity. But I just felt a wee bit flat after Saturday's game, Sunday's game, not just because of the result, but just because of the, it was a general level of performance of the whole game. I don't know if that's unfair, but it just seemed a wee bit like that at the time.
Yeah, it was a broken game, wasn't it? Like there was mistakes in it. You just need to look at Finn Russell's try and like it's hard for it. You're like,
you have to laugh, like, though, don't you? Like
brilliant chaos, wasn't it?
Hoggy kicks it off his chin. So yeah, I mean,
even at that, once Finn got it, he put it through James Lowe's hands on a fly
yeah.
high. Chaos, wasn't it?
Popped it up to him. I wondered at times where Ireland, and I think you talked about it in comms, is that were they getting drawn into our game, and like would they have been getting messages on saying, guys, more structure, stop playing so much in the middle of the park? Because they were probably at their best when they started doing that. Like, there was periods of first and second half when they just controlled territory and made it so difficult for Scotland to get out. Now, like, Scotland speed up the game and they play in a certain way that, you know, suits Scotland. And Stuart Hogg talked about it in his post-match interview, that's Scotland at their best. Mm. But it's just, I suppose, they're trying to find the balance between that and what Johnny Sexton does for Ireland, which is bring that structured game.
Although I do think the try that Hamish scored was almost, and I think I said this in comment, it's almost what Ireland have done against us in recent fixtures, we did against them, which is grind it down and you know, really regain possession under massive physical. I mean, some of the tackles in that period alone were, I mean, the physical was through the roof. And that moment there was another, if a two or three, maybe three, well, more than that, but a real obvious one for me where a packed BT Murrayfield, a crowd inside there is, you're hammering at the line and some heroic defence, a massive, you know, contact. That would have been pretty special experience. And it's just so, such a shame that, I know we kind of help it, but that was a moment where I thought this deserves a crowd.
Yeah, I thought, you know, looking for the positives in it, like the defence was still very good. You know, we were under a huge amount of pressure in the first 20 minutes, but we were only, what was it, 5 points behind Ireland. And I think like that does show the progression we've had there to be under that pressure and still be in such a close position and, you know, a try in it. And like you say, I think, you know, picking out the positives again, Hamish Watson is just, he is just playing unbelievably well. You know, he punches so far above his weight, you know, in those close quarters, like that try he scored, he has no right to score that try up against, you know, like front row forwards and stuff, that double his size almost. But he's just so, you know, committed to every single carry goes into, and his defence as well is probably not something that not often gets talked about. His record around his consecutive tackles in Six Nations is unbelievable. I think, what was it, 100 and plus, over 100 consecutive tackles in a Six Nations is just unbelievable. So, you know, looking for positives in that game, him standing up week on week for us has been massive this Six Nations. And as I say, defence underpins that. And I think as a team, that is something we did consistently do well again. So, I think, you know, like you say, the loose game and attack probably let us down and made us feel a little bit flat, because it wasn't what it has been, particularly that first half against Wales and against England. But it's not far away. And I do think we need to keep kind of that momentum and keep behind the boys, and hopefully they go out next week and kind of pick it up again.
And it's weird that the way that the results could fall as well, that we get to that France game and we could still finish second in this tournament just because of the way other teams performed as well. So not all hope is lost from, you know, obviously we want to win the championship, but it's not all doom and gloom. But yeah, obviously the boys have got a big challenge this weekend. We all know there's no easy game in the Six Nations. And Italy this weekend will be a tough and different challenge from Ireland. And we'll discuss that in depth without Al, unfortunately, next week on the podcast. Okay, so let's look at some of the big stories around Scottish rugby and the game of rugby itself. A huge story which broke today was that World Rugby have announced details of a new annual Global Women's 15s competition model and international playing windows, which will start from 2023 onwards. Rachel, that's a huge announcement for the game, not just women's rugby, but rugby in general. And finally, it looks like the women are going to get taken seriously and have this brilliant competition to play in.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, it's, we've joked about it, but it's quite a confusing format at the moment, but I'm sure one will kind of come to grips with as we go into it over the next couple of years. But I think it's a massive step forward. I think, you know, we've seen more kind of tests within the women's game the last couple of years, particularly for Scotland, you know, having those extra autumn tests and things like that. It's made a massive difference to us as a team in our kind of development and our learning. So to have these guaranteed, you know, fixtures in the calendar every year is massive for us, and it'll be the same for a number of other countries who don't get as many tests. And it's brilliant for women's rugby just to keep pushing the game on and hopefully get more engagement with the women's game as well, because that'll be massive with these, as hopefully they will push the broadcasting side of it and get the game out there.
It looks like a long-term approach to me as well, which is good. Like, if you know, there's obviously qualification for this World 15 tournament's going to come from, well, Six Nations up here, but then I think there's a joint kind of Pacific and USA competition as well. So the three women's 15s tiers are going to have to be qualified for. So that automatically suggests there'll be some discrepancy in standards, maybe between second tier teams or the teams in the third tier. But long term wise, that's exactly what's going to be needed, being exposed to that to make a better depth or a greater depth. Yeah. Across the competition, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. It's going to improve the depth, and it's also going to improve the competition in every competition, because now, you know, every year the Six Nations has an outcome. You know, they've got something to work towards, if it's that top three or whatever it might be. That automatically improves probably the standard of that competition, because you've got no game which is just a given, or vice versa. So I think that in itself automatically is going to kind of add a bit more to the Six Nations, and hopefully, you know, create that competition within squads and between the teams, and to push the women's game on, and I think that's going to be massive for the game.
Yeah, and there's obviously the performance element to it, but there's also the commercial element of including broadcast in it as well. So, you know, going back to the old analogy, you can't beat, you can't see, the broadcast element is huge. You know, the more eyes we get, Rach, on your games, the bigger and faster the sport's going to grow in every country. So that seems to be a focus behind the structure as well.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with that is just the investment. You know, within the women's game, you know, we're not asking for a lot. We're just asking for investment. And this is exactly what this is. And for us to progress and play at a better standard, it does take that. And I think it's just brilliant to see that World Rugby's kind of showing that the women's game is for the future, and they are going to invest in it, and they are going to try and get us out there, because like Al says, the only way we move forward over the next few years is to get more girls playing and get girls playing at a high standard, and this is a brilliant opportunity for that.
Sticking with the good news around the women's game, finally, hopefully, we're going to see Holly Davidson get a game this weekend in the Pro 14. She's scheduled to take charge of the match between Munster and Benetton this weekend. I know we've talked about it twice before and it's never happened, but we're all just delighted that she's going to get a chance this weekend. Rach, from your point of view, I know Vash...
Let's not talk about it then. Don't talk about it.
And that's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast.
We'll talk about it next week instead.
Best of luck, Holly. Best of luck. Well, that's all from us this week on the podcast. But this week, as it is his last ever, well, not ever, we might get him back. We'll see. We'll see how we go. We'll see how numbers go. If they're getting strong, we'll keep them away. But if they're getting low, we'll bring them back in. I'll let you do the outro because it's your last one. And maybe just before you do it, you can maybe just mention what's been some of your highlights. Maybe somebody you've chatted to or some of the conversations we've had before you go. But I'll let you finish up and take us out, seeing how it is your final episode here on the official Scottish Rugby podcast.
Well, you've just done the outro. That'll do, Jeremy. I've really enjoyed it. It's good fun. We get to talk about rugby, which is always nice. As far as highlights are concerned, you mentioned Holly there briefly, but the episode we did with the refs, I loved it because I'd spent my career speaking to refs, but just in a different manner. I also really enjoyed it when we had the Sevens boys on, because it was a completely different insight. It was like, no idea what really happened on the Sevens tour, so we got some detail in there. So just, I suppose, exploring new areas of rugby. And probably the biggest highlight, Jamie, has to be the development, growth, and now leadership that Rachel Malcolm takes on the podcast. She's outshining us all as the top 10 player in the world. And, you know, I feel as if my time to move on has definitely come because, you know, Rach is in charge of this now. So just on that, thanks very much for listening to me on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. I'm sure it's going to be in better hands moving forward. Enjoy the game at the weekend, everybody.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks for mentioning three podcasts that I had no involvement in myself. That's brilliant.
You're not in any of them?
I was not in any of them. Nope, not in one. So thanks for that, Al.